All right, so welcome to my second podcast. Today I'm going to be talking about helping others through teaching. And this conversation kind of came out of a comment that was made on my first podcast by Eddie. And he asked me, is this something that you teach in your classes, or how does this Is this, do you have like some kind of curriculum or something? And I started thinking about it because one of the things that I've always tried to do when teaching in general is that I try to sneak up on people. I always try and be very indirect about the core values I'm trying to teach, and go more after someone's interests and then circle back with what they're supposed to be learning. And that approach kind of was something that I feel like some of my best teachers imparted on me when I was at UT Austin, and when I was and even in high school, some of my best teachers were the kinds of teachers that would let you go out on your interest really far, further than most people would. And then as you would hit struggles and as you would kind of hit markers in your projects, you'd have to come back and ask for help and ask questions. And that was kind of the part that I kind of really took note of and kind of reveled in. And so, through my early stages of high school and then into college, I was very much so that kind of person that I wanted to work on my passions. In my regular classes, if it was history or government or psychology, I may have just sat there in class and just listened. And these were, 300 to 400, 500 person classes. I call them cattle call courses because you kind of felt like cattle, just kind of like mooing into class. And so, it didn't engage me. But when I got into these other smaller classes, where they kind of took an interest in what you were thinking, I tend to flourish. And then on the other side, outside of school, I was learning about helping others because I had been a Boy Scout. I had done a lot of lawn maintenance work when I was a kid, and that was all about helping to make sure that these lawns were clean and well kept. And so when I was about 15 years old, I really got into audio and hi-fi, and I got so into it that I ended up taking recording engineering classes. And my father had bought me some books, and I started reading the books, and it really kind of provided this space for me to explore a passion of mine. And I ended up going to this hi-fi store called Concert Sound, and they had this whole other approach to selling hi-fi, which was you came in and you told them what kind of music you liked, and they kind of just showed you from the most basic system all the way to, $50,000 hi-fi. And they were never asking you, what you wanted to buy. They were just showing you what they had, and you would kind of just, after a while, you would just kind of say what you wanted to buy, and that's what you would get. And so it was just this whole other approach, and like a high pressure salesman approach, and it had a lot of value. And I ended up meeting a lot of people in that space, and then I ended up just working really well with one of the owners, Creston Funk, and I ended up helping him run his hi-fi store for 10 years while I was in school. And we actually became an importer and started importing electronics. And through that process, Creston was very much roundabout about teaching me the value of helping others through the love of music. And so I learned a lot from him about how to be patient with people, to not worry about the quick sale, to worry about people being truly satisfied with what they've come in to get. And so as I juxtaposed that with going to school and at this really big university, and I was driving back and forth, I was making a lot of connections in between. And then when I got into grad school, I kind of hit this point where I was learning, I had learned a lot of helping people through HiFi, and I started implementing kind of, you know, whether I knew it or not, I started implementing that like in the classroom as a student. And so I would end up being able to like converse with people very easily. And they were always like, you know, you're just so easy to talk to. And I was like, well, you know, I didn't realize that at the time, but like, this is what I did outside of school. I was talking to people and in a very sincere, genuine way, and selling them things that were very expensive and were items that they did not have to have. There was no need to buy a hi-fi. Understand what I just said, no need to buy a hi-fi, meaning that it's something that you want, it's something that you enjoy. And so the cool part is that when somebody's buying a hi-fi, they're usually doing pretty okay in life and are really excited about it. And kind of in a very reflexive way, I wanted that same enthusiasm in school, because I was like, people should be going to school because they're excited about learning and excited about being there. And at the time in school, you know, it didn't always feel that way. It felt very forced. It felt very, you had to kind of mold to academia rather than academia molding to you. And at the same time, I was kind of thinking, well, but we're spending the same amount of money on that as that hi-fi, and in some cases, like on a Porsche, you know, or something that you really get something out of in terms of experience and like a residual effect. And so that just really got me thinking. And when I got into grad school, one of the first things they told me as a grad student was, you know, you're a master's student, but you're not going to be a teaching assistant yet. That's something that PhDs do. And just through happenstance, another student in my cohort named Brandon Wiley and I showed a keen understanding of technology and of how to use it within our like theory courses and our literature courses. But people would bring up ideas in theory, and we'd be able to apply it to kind of what was going on in new media and technology. And so that was kind of noted by some professors, and quickly we were asked to, like within our first semester, we were asked to help assist in some new media courses. And so we just went into these courses, and we weren't teaching assistants. We were actually like assistants for the teaching assistants, or I think they may have been AIs. I can't remember, which is an assistant instructor. I won't bore you with all that too much too often, but sometimes it comes out of me. I start talking echo babble or whatever you want to call it. And we would literally just help them like kind of take the papers from the engineers and give it to the customers, meaning that we would translate like how you use Adobe Photoshop, which these people didn't know how to use, or how to use a video editing program, but actually like how to teach people how to use it was what we did. And that was a unique asset, and it has been for my whole life. While we were doing that, we were also taking classes. And one of the professors that we studied under was Sandy Stone. And Sandy Stone ended up becoming, you know, one of the biggest influences in my life, and still is to this day. But at the time, you know, she had her TAs. We were, you know, fresh graduate students. But Brandon and I were taking a class of hers, and she had a TA, but the TA wasn't exactly how Brandon and I would be TAs. He was kind of condescending and not very helpful. Like, we would want to test our projects on the projector, and he would tell us no, things like that. And so instead of getting upset and kind of being mad about it, Brandon and I collectively somehow just decided that we would just help everybody in that class, even though we were just students in the class. And so what we did was, it's not like we did everybody's projects. What we did was we would just go up to every student that was in the lab at the time and just ask them what they were working on and if they needed any help or they had any questions. And so we just did this. And by the end of the semester, Sandy was, you know, kind of like, I don't know why I feel this way, but like, I think y'all should be my TAs, you know, next semester. And then About 6 years later, we finished being her TAs because we ended up doing our master's and our PhD with Sandy. And it was a really transformational time. I think if I had to kind of say this is when we started teaching people how to help others formally, when I started helping teach people formally how to help others, this was it. Brandon brought not even a juxtaposition, just an enthusiasm that added up with my enthusiasm to help other people in such a genuine way that we were kind of intoxicating. And I don't mean that in an arrogant way. I mean it as in a very positive, happy way. Like we would literally work with our students to teach them anything they wanted to learn. And we started off with about 3 hours of office hours, and they were very kind of conventional at first. And then we started understanding that we could do so much more with our office hours if we just pretended like they weren't office hours. And so what we started doing was having, we would play videos in the background that just were interesting to us on that projector. And we'd end up having friends just kind of come and hang out. And there were friends that were always doing something interesting. So we'd have, and by interesting, I mean working on open source projects or working on some kind of play or working on a startup or some sort of initiative that kind of was either already beyond the classroom or was working towards going beyond the classroom. And so what we ended up doing was creating like what we would think of as a creative space. And the creative space was a space that ended up having like 6 hours a week where students and even just people from the community, like the greater Austin community, would come and hang out and work on their projects, work on ideas, ideate, hack. We would end up creating like informal, not understanding, there weren't hacker spaces yet at this time, or they weren't called hacker or maker spaces. But we would end up having these bins of electronics and bins of soldering irons and bins of art supplies. And then we already had these computers in our lab, and people would just start coming in and doing circuit bending and taking hard drives apart and learning how they worked and making, you know, connections between the theories we were reading in class and creating physical objects and kind of really rethinking the way in which we learned. And what would happen is we'd have this thing that I would kind of coin later called reciprocal mentoring. It's probably a generic term that a lot of people use. But the idea was is that even if you were coming to get help, you would end up helping someone else in ways that you didn't foresee. So a lot of times people don't see their inherent value, especially when they come into something new or something that they think is above them in terms of the next level of education or the next level of. All right, so evidently my phone cut out because airport mode doesn't turn off Wi-Fi, which I got a phone call somehow. So anyways, back to talking about reciprocal mentoring. You know, it's something that when we were in those office hours, I ended up interacting with so many people that were teaching me things. And I was learning about them, and then I was also learning about their interests and their passions. And so one such student was this student named Jason Nguyen. And you can look him up on Google. He's a stunt person. And it's really funny because the first time he came into class, he was like, "I'm a stunt person." We were like, "Yeah, okay." And he literally got up on the table and fell off the table and got up, got back on the table and fell flat on his face on the table and got up and was like, "I'm a stuntman." We were like, "Oh, so like this guy's like a stuntman." And he ended up doing some great projects in class, and that varied a full spectrum of different talents of his that went beyond just being a stunt person. But one of the things that he shared with me in office hours was that, you know, he worked as a stunt person in at Six Flags Texas in Dallas. And it was really interesting because he did this like cowboy show, and he rode horses and fell off roofs, and you know, he really enjoyed it and had learned a lot. But one of his other passions was with his cultural heritage and with lion dance. He's Vietnamese, and he was really interested in Chinese lion dance, and kind of taking that lion dance culture to a greater audience. And so he told me, he was like, I want to have a show at Six Flags that's based around lion dancing. And I was just like, all right, well, you know, you should put a business plan together. And he was like, yeah, okay, what is that? And I was like, okay, well, let's sit down. So for 6 weeks, we worked on this business plan, and he put a whole pitch together, figuring out, you know, how many people he needed and the resources and the insurance and the accommodations. I mean, literally everything. And he put the pitch together and pitched it to Six Flags, and they accepted it. And that's what he did that summer. And then he went on to become a professional stunt person after graduating. And that's what he does to this day. So you can check him out in Flow Rider music videos if you want. But what was the reciprocal part was that I ended up learning so much about his culture and so much about his ability to help other people and how he did it, and a whole, you know, other approach to teaching in terms of his own lived reality and how he motivates himself, and then how he motivates others, which was through a lot of positive reinforcement, a lot of play, a lot of physical play. And that was something I hadn't really thought about, and is something that I've definitely incorporated in the way in which I teach now. So yeah, like, I never saw myself teaching people how to help other people in the sense that I never saw myself doing it outright. And I still don't do it to this day that way. I don't tell people, I am going to teach you how to help others. But what I have seen myself do is exude it and simplify it in a way that is very passive along with some active teaching. Like I said, kind of circling back. And so the way I do it nowadays is that I have it very simplified in terms of how people learn from me or how I teach them in general, which is I take something they're interested in, I take some theory or tool, and then we take their heart right here, and we mix it together, and we make stuff. And if we knew what that stuff was, then we would just say, go make that thing. So for example, if you're taking a video class with me, we know that the tool is going to be video, but you know, what is your interest? What is it that you're passionate about down here? And how do we make those things play together? And some people may have lots of ideas but not know much about the tools. And some people may know all this stuff about the tools but not have a big idea to work off of. And then some people have a lot of passion for the topic but don't know much about the tools and haven't learned a lot about narrative storytelling or documentary or experimental film, and knowing that that can be how you go and find your interests and start pulling together that piece. And so we end up having, you know, these three areas that people can kind of pull from and learn from and approach from, and it lets people kind of feel more empowered and less like, well, I have to know everything about video production, or I have to know how to write a screenplay, and I have to have all my ideas fleshed out in order for me to even start using a camera, or I have to be super passionate about this, and because I'm not, I can't really do any of the other two things. I can't get started. And what that's helped me do is apply it to anything, whether it's figuring out their finances or figuring out how to start. So somehow my phone thought it had run out of memory when it had it. And so so you know, you can use it to start a business. You can use it for a slew of different things. And really, the idea behind it is that if you can see these three spaces and you can understand kind of where you come from if you're passion driven or idea driven or skills driven. You can take that and start applying that to people that are around you and seeing, you know, where they fall in that space and how you can help them find those other links, you know, the links between those spaces, and really be able to kind of help and empower people without having to sit there and say, you know, here's where you're wrong, here's not what you don't know how to do, or this or that, and more really focus on kind of saying, hey, like, it seems like this is, you know, what you're really talented at. Here are some other areas that you may want to explore and or have people help you with, or have people do if you're building a team and building a company and have that kind of drive. Because to me, I'm a half glass full person. I tend to try and take positive traits of people and match them up with other positive traits of others and have them understand that reciprocal ability to help each other. And that's not because I don't understand that, you know, there's what I call the balsa wood model, where you have, you know, it was based out of architecture and people would like knock over their designs and criticize them and tell them how they're horrible people and build them back up to be, you know, model architects or whatever, and kind of replicate that culture. I just don't believe in it. I'm like, why do I want to be in a space where I have to exude all this negative energy, like raise my blood pressure and be mad and kind of just have this grumpiness that I just don't need to have in my life, and I don't need to have other people have in their lives that are around me. And so when I started kind of taking this approach, I was able to help people see that in a positive way, that, yeah, you may have some deficiencies, but that's okay. Like, we all have deficiencies. And we can help each other find them and augment them and work to build up new understandings of how you can overcome them. So anyways, I hope you appreciated this podcast and that you liked it. And if you didn't, you can give a little thumbs down. I don't care. But I hope you have a great week, and I look forward to doing the next podcast.